Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the economic reconstruction and recovery plan announced yesterday. Reconstruction, obviously a nod to the RDP, and we did see the logo of the NDP on this plan, so the NDP hasn't disappeared. Boosie, on the infrastructure side, what government really needs to do, surely, is open up the playing field, firstly between the public and the private sector, so that, for example, where Eskom and Transnet had monopolies, that gets opened up for the private sector on a competitive basis. And the real issue here, surely, is that you offer infrastructure projects on that competitive basis, you find capital chasing these projects and bidding down the price, and then for taxpayers, you're getting infrastructure built by the private sector at the lowest possible price in a competitive, open and transparent process that isn't really going to incur the same kind of cost and time overruns that we've seen with the likes of Medupi and Kusile. Was there anything in this plan to give you an indication that that is the way government's thinking when it comes to rolling out infrastructure?
So I think the one positive thing that definitely came from the plan, and as far as this is concerned, is how the president highlighted the importance of the PFMA, the MFMA reforms, as well as the PPP changes, you know, that the National Treasury is currently looking at. So I'm hoping that there's going to be a serious shift towards how, you know, or what best model of PPP do we actually need to implement in this country. But we also don't need to try and find the best model, Michael, because I think we've got great PPP initiatives that were actually successfully ushered, you know, in this country, you know, like the King Albert Luthuli Hospital, you know, in the KZN. So we just need willingness from government, you know, to ensure that they bring the private sector in a meaningful way in as far as infrastructure is concerned. But I'm worried that as I was listening to what the president is saying, there seems to be a lot of advocacy around the state centrality, you know, in as far as the infrastructure initiative is concerned. But I guess we're going to have to accept that the public, or rather government, doesn't have deep enough pockets to can actually fund the infrastructure program of this country. So I think to the extent that they can actually acknowledge and realize that, and therefore, you know, try and find these meaningful ways, or rather fast track whatever it is that NT is doing in as far as the PPPs are concerned, then that's actually going to be, you know, most positive. And I think from a capital markets perspective, global capital markets perspective, I'm worried that we don't seem to realize that there's been a serious fundamental change and shift in how South Africa has been positioned over the years, you know, from an investment attractiveness, you know, perspective. So we need to understand that when we go to these negotiations, you know, with our begging bowls, you know, to the capital market, you know, we are going to have to be willing to accept some of the conditionalities, even, and some of them might not be, you know, favorable to the South African environment. But I guess, you know, we go to those negotiations understanding that it's not going to be a negotiation of equals, you know, because I think we have lost that plot as a country. We need to understand that we have lost our positioning as the attractive investment destination in the African continent. You know, we've got other players in the African continent that are actually giving us a run for their money. But also in the current environment, there are a lot of emerging economies, Michael, that are doing what we're doing, that are actually trying to get their slice of capital allocation, you know, from the global capital market. So we are therefore competing in a very tough environment, and we are competing with markets that are actually more conducive from a policy framework perspective, which is where we are dismally failing, you know, as a country. So I guess it's going to have to be a give and take, and there's going to have to be willingness, you know, from South Africa to accept what we were not willing to accept before. I mean, we did the same when we took the 70 billion loan from the IMF, you know, which came with conditionalities that we were not happy with, but we understood that we needed the money, and it's not like we are waiting or we have a long list of investors that can't wait to invest in the South African market. The reality is that our, you know, situation and our fate as a country has changed.
There was a mention, and staying on the kind of fiscal macro side of the equation, Duma, there was a mention of reprioritizing funds to poverty alleviation, to infrastructure, and being very much aware that we can't raise too much in terms of new debt. And that speaks to repurposing the budget and shifting funds away from other big ticket items. The wage bill has got to be the biggest one at the moment, and that decision seems to have been deferred to the medium-term budget. I didn't see too much to suggest that the president was drawing a line in the sand between government and COSATU in particular to say we're going to have to start shifting money away from the public wage bill if we want to get greater return on investment by investing in infrastructure. Where do you think that decision ultimately rests?
You know, Michael, I've been actually looking at this thing in a bit detail. And, you know, the money that will be shifted from not paying the increase this year is only 37 billion rands. So we're not talking about a lot of money. This wage bill is not something that you can't change the dial, shift the dial significantly in like 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. It's a long-term process, and I don't think there'll be much savings from that. And I just think that we have to start thinking really creatively about how we're going to finance the stimulus that we need. And there's many ideas that I've proposed in the past. First of all, if you look at the whole SA Inc. Balance sheet, there's 2.1 trillion in the Public Investment Corporation. I believe it's overfunded. Most government employee pension funds are not funded, or they are partially funded. And if you assume a 50% funding level, you can release a lot of money into the economy. Secondly, the World Bank chief economist, Carmen Reinbart, was saying, you know, borrowing is justified under these conditions. You must first fight the virus, and then you work out how you're going to pay it later. And then the third thing is our central bank can come to the party and provide some of the funding for this. Is it 760 billion rand, deficit this year? And the PIC can come to the party. So if you have an SA Inc. approach, and I'm actually really disappointed that they haven't become more active on the bond market to bring down the yields further down as they could have done. Yeah.
And that will also come down over time as we regain credibility on some of those micro reforms, and as we try and inch by inch regain our investment grade rating from the credit ratings agencies. Hiku, on this issue of how this gets funded, I suppose that's where the plan will be tested against the medium term budget next week or in 2 weeks' time. Sorry, it's been shifted.
Yeah, I think that's right. So this is always the question, and you know, I sometimes have some critique in terms of the way we do planning, right? We sort of put a plan together, we talk months about it, then it gets announced, and then we leave the poor officials at Treasury to come up with the money, as opposed to perhaps saying, well, let's start from the beginning and say, well, this is the amount that we have available, and then we work our plans around that. So I think it does put the Treasury in a difficult position at this late stage to now and go and see how they can actually put the scheme together. If I may just quickly say one or two things. So I think it is important to put what the World Bank and the IMF to nuance what they are saying on spending. So they are saying it's right. They are saying yes, spend more in these conditions. But it's crucial what you spend your money on. So you should be spending stuff that raises your tax base or your potential GDP over time. So these would be things like on infrastructure, as we are planning to do. It's certainly not on current expenditure. So there's a specific line on this in the latest World Economic Outlook. We will save a hell of a lot of money. 40 billion rand is not nothing if you're on an unsustainable path. And of course, it's not just 40 billion in 1 year, right? I mean, it's 40 billion every year that you save if you freeze the wage bill. So then it does start to add up to 160 billion rand over 3-4 years. So again, we're not going to have finality on this in the mini budget or in the October budget statement. This is now in the courts. the negotiations for the next 3 years have been postponed until we have clarity from the courts on this, so the unions versus government. So I'm afraid there's not going to be clarity on this for the foreseeable future, but as long as it's in the courts, it does give the Treasury, I think, the opportunity to assume basically a freeze on that wage bill going forward. The risk, of course, is if we get 3-4 months down the line and the courts came out against government and they now have to back pay, I mean, then we have a problem, right? Because now you may have provided more funds to finance this recovery project. And then on top of, for me, is a real risk on a 6 to 12 month view. Mm.
And then lastly, Busi, on micro reforms and also this idea of reindustrializing the economy through local procurement, it's certainly not a new idea. We've been talking about this for a very long time in South Africa, trying to direct a buy local campaign for businesses. And my concern is, if you're not competitive, if you're not producing the lowest cost goods, and you force businesses to go and buy local, you're just upping their cost base and you're making them uncompetitive. Surely this is just barking up the wrong tree.
Absolutely, and this is why it's not going to happen, Michael. So unless there is an imposition of large tariffs on imports to make local production cheaper, then I think this buying local campaign without a supportive environment is actually not going to happen. So there is a lot that we're going to have to do as a country from a dumping practices perspective, from the cheap substitutes that we get from China and other Asian markets, you know, and in dealing with those, you know, to ensure that we can actually protect the local market as it were. So, but then shouting localization without those interventions in place, it is definitely a no-no, because I guess let's agree, you know, that there is no business that is actually going to increase their unit cost of production, you know, just for the sake of being patriotic. You know, businesses exist for a very specific reason, you know, and it is to ensure that there is a potential to make profits, you know, and to the extent that there is that potential to make profits, and therefore, you know, the local producers are somehow protected and we can buy from them, then definitely that is going to happen. So it's also a pipe dream in my view. It can be achieved, but I guess we need DTIC to come in and ensure that there are those interventions that they put in place to achieve that, Michael.
Yeah, there was the program, the MCEP, the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program, very well subscribed, and then the budget for that was removed to help ensure that firms are competitive. 20 seconds, I want you all to give me a score out of 10. Busi, starting with you for the plan yesterday, what would you score it out of 10?
From a positivity perspective, it's a 7, but from a realism perspective, it's a 3.
Duma?
3.
Hiku?
Yeah, I sort of agree with Busi. I mean, if for positive spin, I mean, I would give it 8 out of 10, but in terms of whether it will be implemented, yeah, 5 and less, I would imagine.
Busi, on the infrastructure side, what government really needs to do, surely, is open up the playing field, firstly between the public and the private sector, so that, for example, where Eskom and Transnet had monopolies, that gets opened up for the private sector on a competitive basis. And the real issue here, surely, is that you offer infrastructure projects on that competitive basis, you find capital chasing these projects and bidding down the price, and then for taxpayers, you're getting infrastructure built by the private sector at the lowest possible price in a competitive, open and transparent process that isn't really going to incur the same kind of cost and time overruns that we've seen with the likes of Medupi and Kusile. Was there anything in this plan to give you an indication that that is the way government's thinking when it comes to rolling out infrastructure?
So I think the one positive thing that definitely came from the plan, and as far as this is concerned, is how the president highlighted the importance of the PFMA, the MFMA reforms, as well as the PPP changes, you know, that the National Treasury is currently looking at. So I'm hoping that there's going to be a serious shift towards how, you know, or what best model of PPP do we actually need to implement in this country. But we also don't need to try and find the best model, Michael, because I think we've got great PPP initiatives that were actually successfully ushered, you know, in this country, you know, like the King Albert Luthuli Hospital, you know, in the KZN. So we just need willingness from government, you know, to ensure that they bring the private sector in a meaningful way in as far as infrastructure is concerned. But I'm worried that as I was listening to what the president is saying, there seems to be a lot of advocacy around the state centrality, you know, in as far as the infrastructure initiative is concerned. But I guess we're going to have to accept that the public, or rather government, doesn't have deep enough pockets to can actually fund the infrastructure program of this country. So I think to the extent that they can actually acknowledge and realize that, and therefore, you know, try and find these meaningful ways, or rather fast track whatever it is that NT is doing in as far as the PPPs are concerned, then that's actually going to be, you know, most positive. And I think from a capital markets perspective, global capital markets perspective, I'm worried that we don't seem to realize that there's been a serious fundamental change and shift in how South Africa has been positioned over the years, you know, from an investment attractiveness, you know, perspective. So we need to understand that when we go to these negotiations, you know, with our begging bowls, you know, to the capital market, you know, we are going to have to be willing to accept some of the conditionalities, even, and some of them might not be, you know, favorable to the South African environment. But I guess, you know, we go to those negotiations understanding that it's not going to be a negotiation of equals, you know, because I think we have lost that plot as a country. We need to understand that we have lost our positioning as the attractive investment destination in the African continent. You know, we've got other players in the African continent that are actually giving us a run for their money. But also in the current environment, there are a lot of emerging economies, Michael, that are doing what we're doing, that are actually trying to get their slice of capital allocation, you know, from the global capital market. So we are therefore competing in a very tough environment, and we are competing with markets that are actually more conducive from a policy framework perspective, which is where we are dismally failing, you know, as a country. So I guess it's going to have to be a give and take, and there's going to have to be willingness, you know, from South Africa to accept what we were not willing to accept before. I mean, we did the same when we took the 70 billion loan from the IMF, you know, which came with conditionalities that we were not happy with, but we understood that we needed the money, and it's not like we are waiting or we have a long list of investors that can't wait to invest in the South African market. The reality is that our, you know, situation and our fate as a country has changed.
There was a mention, and staying on the kind of fiscal macro side of the equation, Duma, there was a mention of reprioritizing funds to poverty alleviation, to infrastructure, and being very much aware that we can't raise too much in terms of new debt. And that speaks to repurposing the budget and shifting funds away from other big ticket items. The wage bill has got to be the biggest one at the moment, and that decision seems to have been deferred to the medium-term budget. I didn't see too much to suggest that the president was drawing a line in the sand between government and COSATU in particular, to say we're going to have to start shifting money away from the public wage bill if we want to get greater return on investment by investing in infrastructure. Where do you think that decision ultimately rests?
You know, Michael, I was just, I've been actually looking at this thing in a bit detail. And, you know, the money that will be shifted from not paying the increase this year is only 37 billion rands. So we're not talking about a lot of money. This wage bill is not something that can, you can't change the dial, shift the dial significantly in like 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. It's a long-term process, and I don't think there'll be much savings from that. And I just think that we have to start thinking really creatively about how we're going to finance the stimulus that we need. And there's many ideas that I've proposed in the past. First of all, if you look at the whole SA Inc. Balance sheet, there's 2.1 trillion in the Public Investment Corporation. I believe it's overfunded. Most government employee pension funds are not funded, or they are partially funded. And if you assume a 50% funding level, you can't release a lot of money into the economy. Secondly, the World Bank chief economist, Carmen Reimbert, was saying, you know, borrowing is justified under these conditions. You must first you must first fight the virus, and then you work out how you're going to pay it later. And then the third thing is our central bank can come to the party and provide some of the funding for this. Is it 760 billion rand, what you call it, deficit this year? And the PIC can come to the party. So we have an SA Inc. approach. And I'm actually really disappointed that they haven't become more active on the bond market to bring down the yield, the yields further down as they could have done. Yeah.
And that will also come down over time as we regain credibility on some of those micro reforms and as we try and inch by inch regain our investment grade rating from the credit ratings agencies. Hiku, on this issue of how this gets funded, I suppose that's where the plan will be tested against the medium term budget next week or in 2 weeks' time. Sorry, it's been shifted.
Yeah, I think that's right. So this is always the question, and you know, I sometimes have some critique in terms of the way we do planning, right? We sort of put a plan together, we talk months about it, then it gets announced, and then we leave the poor officials at Treasury to come up with the money, as opposed to perhaps saying, well, let's start from the beginning and say, well, this is the amount that we have available, and then we work our plans around that. So I think it does put the Treasury in a difficult position at this late stage to now and go and see how they can actually put the scheme together. If I may just quickly say one or two things. So I think it is important to put what the World Bank and the IMF to nuance what they are saying on spending. So they are saying it's right. They are saying yes, spend more in these conditions. But it's crucial what you spend your money on. So you should be spending stuff that raises your tax base or your potential GDP over time. So these would be things like on infrastructure, as we are planning to do. It's certainly not on current expenditure. So there's a specific line on this in the latest World Economic Outlook. We will save a hell of a lot of money. 40 billion rand is not nothing if you're on an unsustainable path. And of course, it's not just 40 billion in 1 year, right? I mean, it's 40 billion every year that you save if you freeze the wage bill. So then it does start to add up to 160 billion rand over 3-4 years. So again, we're not going to have finality on this in the mini budget or in the October budget statement. This is now in the courts. The negotiations for the next 3 years have been postponed until we have clarity from the courts on this. So the unions versus government. So I'm afraid there's not going to be clarity on this for the foreseeable future. But as long as it's in the courts, it does give the Treasury, I think, the opportunity to assume basically a freeze on that wage bill going forward. The risk, of course, is if we get 3-4 months down the line and the courts came out against government and they now have to back pay, I mean, then we have a problem, right? Because now you may have provided more funds to finance this recovery project. And then on top of, for me, is a real risk on a 6 to 12 month view. Mm.
And then lastly, Busi, on micro reforms and also this idea of reindustrializing the economy through local procurement, it's certainly not a new idea. We've been talking about this for a very long time in South Africa, trying to direct a buy local campaign for businesses. And my concern is if you're not competitive, if you're not producing the lowest cost goods and you force businesses to go and buy local, you're just upping their cost base and you're making them uncompetitive. Surely this is just barking up the wrong tree.
Absolutely, and this is why it's not going to happen, Michael. So unless there is an imposition of large tariffs on imports to make local production cheaper, then I think this buying local campaign without a supportive environment is actually not going to happen. So there is a lot that we're going to have to do as a country from a dumping practices perspective, from the cheap substitutes that we get from China and other Asian markets, you know, and in dealing with those, you know, to ensure that we can actually protect the local market as it were. So, but then shouting localization without those interventions in place it's definitely a no-no, because I guess let's agree, you know, that there is no business that is actually going to increase their unit cost of production, you know, just for the sake of being patriotic. You know, businesses exist for a very specific reason, you know, and it is to ensure that there is a potential to make profits, you know, and to the extent that there is that potential to make profits, and therefore, you know, the local producers are somehow protected and we can buy from them, then definitely that is going to happen. So it's also a pipe dream in my view. It can be achieved, but I guess we need DTIC to come in and ensure that there are those interventions that they put in place to achieve that, Michael.
Yeah, there was the program, the MSEP, the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program, very well subscribed, and then the budget for that was removed to help ensure that firms are competitive. 20 seconds, I want you all to give me a score out of 10. Busi, starting with you for the plan yesterday, what would you score it out of 10?
From a positivity perspective, it's a 7, but from a realism perspective, it's a 3.
Duma?
3.
Hiku?
Yeah, I'd sort of agree with Busi. I mean, if for positive spin, I mean, I would give it 8 out of 10, but in terms of whether it will be implemented, yeah, 5 and less, I would imagine.
So we're averaging about a 4 then, and that's really the bottom line. Thank you very much to today's panel discussing the reconstruction and recovery plan. Busi Mabuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa and board member of Eskom. Duma Gabule, economist and founder of KIO Advisory Services. And Hiku Pinar, chief economist at the Bureau of Economic Research. There's a very interesting breakdown of what we spend on in this country. For every 10 rand of government expenditure, more than 3 rand is on transfers, about 3 rand on the public wage bill, and 1 rand on debt. And the remaining 3 rand is supposed to cover goods and services and infrastructure. Now, I think it's a no-brainer as to what we should be doing to ensure that we get growth going.